Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be listening to this podcast long after this interview is over. But although this interview is on today, the information we share is valid and can be used long after this interview. Enjoying this beautiful holiday season and starting to enjoy. It's hard to believe that it really is the countdown before the 25th. There's lots of holiday parties, lots of opportunity for romance. And for those of you who are in romantic relationships, it's a really great opportunity to reconnect with your partner and trying to take a moment to breathe. And what's super cool is perhaps you might want to get a special Christmas present for yourself and for your partner, which is the art of romance. Because I think that's why all of us, well, at least most of us, go into relationships, because there's that heady, delicious, delectable feeling that happens when we get that rush, that honeymoon period. And perhaps there's a little bit of the Cinderella thing going on as well, where we want the happily ever after. But then we get past the honeymoon period and we realize, my gosh, this is a lot of work and it can be really complicated and it's frustrating. Issues come out, all the things we liked about somebody. Sometimes we don't like those things so much anymore. And then sometimes when you add a different mix into it as well, in regards to if you've got different people from different cultures, other things come up. Sometimes value systems are a little bit different as well. I'm very excited because in terms of the art of romance, I think it's a really great way to tack in your New Year's resolutions to make sure you bring romance to your life. You bring love, sex, where it in intimacy, where your relationship is full abundance. So you've kind of got a worksheet and you've got somebody to guide you through that process. That is why I've got the amazing, the fabulous, the wonderful Dr. Faisal. And welcome to the show.
Hey, Caroline. Great to be back.
So good to have you on there. It's always good to have you on.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about this wonderful workshop that you've got coming up, because I just want to jump right in. I'm very excited. And sweetheart, if you're listening, this could be really cool, even though we've got lots of romance. Can never have too much.
You can never have too much. You know, the thing is, Caroline, I've been in private practice as a registered counselor and a sex therapist since 1997. And I've done many things in this area. And I've written a book, as you know. And what I've done, I thought, to instead of seeing clients, and I have a busy workload, relatively busy workload with clients. And I thought, what better way to share my experiences with my clients and how we together as a team increase the sexual intimacy than to coming out with a workshop. And this workshop is something that it's for individuals, for couples, for people of different backgrounds, different sexual orientations. And in a nutshell, it creates and recreates the sexual chemistry, the intimacy between people who attend in a way that just... I'm just so excited to offer this because it's the first time I'll be offering this. And my goal is to get people, to educate people, to get them so passionately involved that when they leave after this 3-hour workshop, they just can't wait to go home and, well.
Let's get it on.
There you go.
A little bit of Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. What I've planned here, without letting everything out of the bag here.
No, they're going to have to come to the workshop.
They will, but I can share a little bit as we talk today in today's hour. You know, I found that people they still today bring in their Victorian sense of sexuality into the bedroom, into their lives, without realizing how damaging it is. And so now and then we need to create a check. Mm-hmm. A check about where they are in their relationships, where they are in their sense of intimate connection. And that's what this workshop does. It creates the sense of getting people to be connected with each other and with themselves, so that when they are sexually intimate, emotionally intimate, sexually intimate, it's the proverbial fireworks each and every time they're together.
So, in other words, breaking that myth that honeymoon period's just for that first 6 months to a year of a relationship.
It doesn't have to end. It doesn't have to end. So that when what I've planned for at the end of the workshop is a special bonus for the participants that attend this one.
Okay.
I'll be sharing my 10-week program on how to create sexual intimacy in your relationship. Now, this 10 weeks, it takes the participants who practice this week by week, step by step, and it creates this magic so that, you know, the first week, I tell my clients, and I tried this with clients before I came up with this, is the first homework assignment for the first week is no intercourse. And you can just imagine their expressions, right?
Well, it builds anticipation, wouldn't it?
Well, sure. Because
the best foreplay ever is saying no. It's like being a teenager all over again where you want to, but half the time you don't know where to. You're kind of scared what to do.
Yeah.
And you're worried you kind of may not be as good at it. But, of course, as an adult, there's different things where it's like, why can't we? We've got a bedroom. We've got birth control if that's something that we want or don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's nothing really stopping us except for ourselves and our personal will.
I mean, when I say that to clients, I've had clients look at me and say, well, wait a minute, we're in the wrong place here. You're supposed to be teaching us how to have good sex. But the thing is, the operative word here is good.
Yes.
Good, intimate sex. And sometimes we need to go back to the basics and rebuild that sexual energy over a few weeks.
Yes.
And so, you know, and I tell my clients and I tell my participants of workshops too, that when you're finished, when you're close to the 10th week, you're going to have so much of this eros, that sexual energy that you just can't wait. To have that.
No sex for 10 weeks.
No intercourse for 10 weeks. But, you know, it depends on how you define sex.
Yes. Like,
for example.
My jaw is dropped, if anybody could see me in this room right now. I get it. But.
Yeah, sex, I mean, there's these exercises that I will reveal in this workshop where you could, looking at your partner, you could start that sexual juices from flowing. And, and in a sense, you are having sex. And then as we go along, there's maybe during this hour, I'll share other ones. But
you are teasing, aren't you? Speaking of foreplay.
Yeah. But, you know, when you do these little things that are all sexual, but there's various aspects of sexuality that uses various senses that we have, that in many different ways that really jumpstart your sexual chemistry, so that when you are in the 10th week and the green light is given, where you can go home and you can it build all the sexual energy and make it, and then you have that sexual intercourse. Wow, it's better than the first time. One of my clients said that this is just like re-virginizing for couples. Well, okay, it's their word. And in fact, it got me thinking, and yeah, it's an appropriate word.
It is, because it's a fresh start where things have kind of died and bringing things back to life.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a rebirth, like the phoenix rising from the ashes.
That's right. Great example, great metaphor. Can I use that?
Yes, you totally can. And I think that's important, because I think, especially in today's society where sex, and I don't mean good sex, just sex, is so readily available. And I think it feels like online shopping sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Where people forget that it is possible if you choose to put the work in.
Mm-hmm.
You can have magic.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing is, one of the things that I wrote an article a few years ago, and if you don't mind, we can talk about it. And I'll just give snippets of it.
Mm.
What I found is that in today's society, just following up on what you said, people just lose the sense of how magical sex can be. And with clients and with other people who attend different workshops of mine, I've seen different scenarios of sex. So, for example, the one scenario I've seen is where a teenager slides his hand under his date's blouse. She tenses, afraid to stop him, afraid to let him go on. Now, what I see and hear is that there's a lot of peer pressure. Put mm-hmm. on teenagers, for example.
Yes.
Boys are expected to be sexually aggressive. Girls, you know, they say, well, I let him do it because I didn't want him to break up with me.
Yeah.
You know, you have that. Also, we see that certain ethnical backgrounds, you know, ethnicities, where you see with the girl, she's scared of certain things about her culture
mm-hmm.
and people of her culture knowing that she's no longer a virgin. Because there's certain cultures that really, they don't want to have anything to do with sex, premarital sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had one client tell me the story, and it's in my book, actually, where she's listening to her mom order pizza. And she's East Indian.
Okay.
And the mom's phoning in. I forgot which pizza place, but phoning in, and she hears her mom's side of the conversation. So the mom, you know, phones in and says, "I'd like to order a veggie lover." And from the background, you can see the person's probably confused, and the mom repeats, "Veggie lover." And the person probably says, you know, "Can you repeat that or something?" And she's, "What don't you understand? I want a veggie lever, L-O-V-E-R. She couldn't come up or make herself say veggie lover. So, because lover means sex. And she didn't want to say sex or any... even indirectly in front of the children.
Wow.
Right? So there's these sensations that go to the kids thinking that sex is bad. And if you do it, don't let anyone, you know, keep it a secret, a dark secret. But as we know, you know, secrets have a way of coming out.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
I also, in the article, I talk about, and I'll just read a little part of this, an issue that we see in today's society. A wife leans forward in bed to turn off the late-night news. She leans back and waits. Numb with habit, bored by repetition, she and her husband silently make love. You know, we see here, the way I look at this, women... or wives in this situation, they think that they're performing a wifely duty. They're just availing themselves sexually to their husband because that's what they're in for, getting married. So it's a wifely duty. And the husband also, you know, there are a lot of husbands out there who are just performing, you know, making the quota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, 3.4 times a month, and I think that's the national average now.
Wow.
And there's no passion.
No.
There's no intimacy. There's no communication. There's none of that sense of sexual trust that goes with with making love. Yeah. You know?
That's really sad, but it's true, where it just becomes a habit as opposed to like 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Turning the shutters down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's your so-called date night as opposed to it. And I do know a lot, many sex therapists do prescribe that where it's like, where they force them to have sex. But like you said, it's having good sex as opposed to
it
just
is.
Sex.
I mean, I do realize that, you know, in our busy life, you know, sometimes you have to pencil in our schedules when we can have sex. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do realize that. But the thing is, I still think that you can do that and still have that sense of passion
and have
involved.
The magic.
So let's say, for example, one of my colleagues, a sex therapist, let's say, gives homework assignments saying that, okay, well, 5 p.m., you know, every Wednesday you're supposed to be in the bed having sex. Okay. What I would add to that is that it says at 5 o'clock. So when you wake up, look at each other, deep in each other's eyes for 30 seconds while you cuddle with each other for a few minutes. Then when you're at work, send each other an email, all right? Say at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, something like this. I appreciate blank about you. Can you imagine opening your email from your partner and it says, I appreciate blank about you? It could be anything. Now, it starts the foreplay. The foreplay starts when you open your eyes in the morning, knowing that you might have sex that day at 5 o'clock, but the foreplay can happen throughout the day. Then during lunch hour, you know, send a little or give each other a phone call. You know, say, I know you're busy and I know, I'm going to a meeting too, but I just called to take a few seconds out of my day to say I'm thinking about you.
I'm going to add one more thing to that. It's been 5 years for my partner and I.
Mm-hmm.
I still, a couple times a week, I put a note in his lunch because I know it's hard for him to get calls at work.
Yeah.
And I imagine some of our listeners out there may have that too.
Yeah.
But then, and he actually gets sad on the days he doesn't get them because he really loves those words of acknowledgement.
That's wonderful because
it makes him happy.
Then he looks forward to lunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lunch could be wonderful too. But the thing
I was not getting better at cooking over all these years,
but
it also makes him think of me.
Yeah, and you know the thing is, there's been studies done that just since we're talking about lunch and food, that you can digest food better when you're in love.
Huh.
So the thing is, I mean, here, you're helping him digest his food too.
That's really good to know. I'm actually really curious if anybody's done a study like that for people who are celiacs or gluten-free gluten sensitivity. Because I'd be very curious if it brought the bloating down, et cetera.
Exactly. Well, there's something in your future then. There's a study that you might want to do.
Either that or any UBC students out here want to take that on who's a dietitian and who's also doing psych.
There you go.
That could be, there you go. There's your thesis.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. Yeah, check back with us after
we want to interview you.
Exactly. On the show.
Yes. And then perhaps we can put it in a book.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Or a workshop.
Yeah. You know, another thing I see with people in today's society is that, and I wrote this down too. I'll just read this line here.
Mm.
Two college students finish studying for the evening. They strip off their clothes. She lies back on the couch without any significant foreplay or even a word of affection. He puts his penis inside of her. Can you imagine?
Yes, it's called the princess lay, where nobody does anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. There's no emotional connection.
No.
There's no effort.
It's genital friction, quite frankly.
Yeah. And the thing is, after the act is over, you know, I've talked to many people, and they say, "Well, I kind of feel violated." You know.
Yeah.
It's just I'm just masturbating using another body.
Yeah.
And in fact, you get more pleasure from masturbation than this, in a sense, because when we're with another person, we have these expectations,
right? Yes. Well, we want the intimacy.
Yeah.
We want that connection.
That's
and when we don't get it and we just get genital friction, it leaves you dissatisfied. It's kind of like being really hungry.
Yes.
And eating a whole bag of potato chips and a chocolate bar
where
you might have felt really good while you're eating it, but you
feel
kind of sick to your stomach and want to vomit it up after. Sorry for anybody if this triggers for bulimia out there.
Mm-hmm.
but sexual bulimia, where you just kind of want to go, ugh, and wash your skin off because you feel gross and violated.
Exactly. And part of that, if I could add that, is after these potato chips and the chocolates and things, what happens is you experience guilt.
Yes.
Because you know you shouldn't have done that. And shame, right? And especially, you know, in cases like this, even if they're, you know, the couple college students, they don't even have to be drunk. But the thing is, what happens afterwards for both males and females, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, females and males, that there's that sense that, oh, you know, was that it? That and this is when many times the partner, whoever place it is not, they just walk up and they get up and walk away, and that adds to the violation.
Very
right?
much so.
And there's a lot of that self blame that comes in too. The why did I succumb to this when I knew it wasn't what I wanted?
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And I think a lot of times people forget that sex is a really intimate act because it, especially now, it's, I keep saying that, but it just feels like such a fast food world in so many ways where it's easy, things are accessible. And as you mentioned, there's almost an expectation, not just in marriage, but I think even when you're dating, where I've had many male friends tell me that they almost expect sex on the third date.
Yes, yes, oh yeah.
Where you don't really know somebody by the third date.
Sure. Well, you know, it's back to, and not to put down the producers of the show, but Sex and the City, you know, where you, that's where it came out, I think, the public consciousness that, you know, third date, no sex, either there's something wrong with him or he's not into you and you move on. Well, maybe he's or she's just shy. Maybe he or she wants to get to know you better. Maybe you want to, they want to create that sense of friendship, that intimacy before they go there. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, me neither. Yeah. And sometimes it's kind of nice actually to wait to the third date to even see if they pass the kiss test first. Mm-hmm. So just building that anticipation.
Oh, sure.
And as you said, do you even want to be around this person? Yeah. Do you actually like them? Is it actually just pheromones that are just fired up because hormonally it feels good at the time?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there actually a real possibility of connection where there's values?
Yeah.
I guess it also depends on what you want. But I think all of us want good sex, regardless what our choices are for relationships.
You know, when you said about the first kiss, I'll tell you a cute story. I had this couple who came in, and it just happened to be a cross-cultural couple. He's Caucasian. They're married, and she was Asian, Chinese. Now, the thing is, they've been married for 10 years, and they came in for issues dealing not specifically with sex, but just relationship, the sense of blasé, you know, in the relationship. They just wanted to get back and connect. And so in doing an assessment with them, they told me a story about how he didn't think that they had any relationship after the first date. And I said, oh, really? Tell me about that. Well, the date went fine. Both agreed. They both remembered the first date 10 years ago, over 10 years ago. He went to, as a gentleman, he walked up to the door to let her go into her place, walked her up to her door, and everything went great. He leaned in to kiss her. She turned away from him and went inside. And he went home. And he didn't sleep all night thinking, what happened? What did I do? Why doesn't she want to kiss me? Everything went great. How come she pulled away? Well, 10 years later, we were talking about this. And she, with I guess the environment that was created, she told him, listen, I grew up in a culture that says, good girls don't kiss on the first date. And it's my culture. The reason I had a great time. You were a perfect gentleman. I really had fun with you. That's why I agreed to the second date. But we don't kiss on the first date. And so he harbored this resentment
for 10 years.
And so we just fast forwarded in therapy because this was the anchor that was holding him back from actually allowing him to be fully intimate with her.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. 10 years.
10 years.
And he was shaking his head. He's thinking, oh, I could have done so much with her in 10 years. And even though we married, but there was something where I was pulling back. I wasn't letting her really see my inner core because of this. Wow.
Well, thank goodness they didn't wait 20 years before coming to see you.
Yeah.
So at least this next 10 years will be more rich where they can connect.
But again, it all comes down to open, honest, non-judgmental communication, as I say so often. If they were to talk about this incident, if he brought it up, you know, sooner, maybe on the next date, hey, you know, I thought we had a great date. You pulled back, so I thought maybe I did something wrong or something happened. She would have then openly told him, well, no, in my culture, we don't kiss on our first date. And wow, you know, it could have saved so much anguish for him. Yeah.
That's sad and beautiful at the same time. That beautiful because they finally realized and you were able to get them back to the root of what was going on.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I see with homosexual people as well, you know, and I'll just read this. This is from the same article. Two homosexual men work together in the same company. They enjoy each other's company and are attracted to one another, but they keep their longing for one another silent without sharing their desires. They fear being vulnerable, of being shamed about their sexual preference. You know, as a society, we've come so far in terms of accepting people from all sexual backgrounds and orientations. But we still see that where people look at society for approval. And if they feel in their society or in their community or even at the work culture, right, that they're not going to be accepted for being openly gay, they hide that. And they're, again, we're talking about the 10 years that couple missed out. And here, these individuals will miss out on so many years too if they don't share and communicate really what they're feeling inside.
Wow.
You deal with society later. Be open for, I think, honest to yourself and then to that to person, that love interest that you have.
I'm going to jump in and add one more thing in there too. And if you do work in a workplace where relationships and you've signed a code of conduct agreement that you're not allowed to date somebody in your workplace, which could be the possibility as well, depending on the situation, which I know wasn't quite where you're going on that one. But sometimes that's the reason too.
Sure.
It may be worth actually exploring and seeing if there's other places you might want to work.
Yeah.
Oh, or one of you.
And there's always options.
There is. Yeah. Because people used to meet through religious organizations and through work.
Yeah.
And before all the sexual harassment laws, which unfortunately there was necessary reason. We've seen that with CBC, with the Jan Gomeshid case.
Yes.
But with that, there's very good reasons for all those laws to protect. But at the same time, sometimes I think it makes people fearful where they're afraid of getting too flirty.
Yeah.
Where sometimes there's something kind of nice about flirting within reason.
Within reason.
As long as it doesn't turn into gropey scariness.
Yeah. As long as I guess there's that sense of trust and respect involved.
Yes.
If you have that, I mean, you know, little harmless flirtation, knowing your boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if it's at work, the work boundaries, the boundaries that are there in that environment. Sure. But again, you know, it's where people try to overstep these boundaries because they think that they're bigger than the boundaries itself. That's when I think we have a sliding slope and things get out of hand, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. But in regards to coming out to where people are attracted to each other and sometimes choose not to, it's, as you said, it's nice because the world is evolving where in Vancouver in particular, for our listeners, because we may have listeners all around the world, which I know we do. We've got one actually who speaks about us on Twitter from Brazil all the time and comments about the show, which is quite lovely.
Wow.
But there's so many different cultures.
Yes, and the thing is, I guess we living in Vancouver, the multicultural hub, I think.
Very much so.
Canada, if not for the whole world. Because we're interfaith, interrace, cross-cultural marriages are inclined dramatically. We have 8% of all marriages now in Vancouver are cross-cultural.
Last time we had you on the show, we talked about that.
Why do you think the national average is less than 4, but Vancouver, I think we here, we have a society that is so accepting.
Okay.
Of other cultures, of other backgrounds, of other sexualities, of other faiths. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful thing to see. Because, when you walk around and you see people just smiling at each other, regardless of how they look, what color their skin is, what faith they have, it's just you're a human being. I think we here in Canada and in Vancouver, we want to get to know the individual more so than just creating these stereotypes about them based on the way they look. And I think that's a blessing. Mm-hmm. If we have more people like that who want to get to know the core, the values that people hold. Mm-hmm. That's how you begin a relationship, or I think why you should.
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah.
And we forget about that sometimes as a society as well. But it's nice that things are starting to evolve more and more.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of romance, is there, besides obviously having open communication, if I think back to the example you gave of the couple where she turned her head because of cultural reasons, because she didn't believe in kissing on the first date, is there other things we can do? You mentioned, of course, communication. Mm-hmm. I loved the mantra you said, communication.
Yeah, open, honest, non-judgmental communication.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we implement that, and I want to ask one more thing, and perhaps it's just me, but I think with communication, it's gauging time and place as well.
Yes.
And in the last couple of days, I've actually had a few heated discussions about that with people wanting to share their emotions and how they feel because it's honest.
Yeah.
But doing it sometimes when it's not always the most appropriate times to do it.
Yeah. Could you give me an example?
Sure. For example, someone having a fight with their partner and they're leading a workshop and they start crying in front of everybody else where their job when they come in to lead that workshop is to hold space for all the participants not to be basically supping up sympathy and instead and then having that discussion with the coworkers and not understanding, well, I'm being honest, I'm giving an example of my vulnerability.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, actually,
you're
basically emotionally masturbating.
Sure, exactly. And unfortunately, there are people in certain industries who go into those industries as a way to manipulate certain situation, maybe unconsciously, just to get their own sense of validation. So whether they're a speaker or whether they're, a police officer or whether they're a teacher or a counselor or what have you. And I think that is something that they need to work on.
Okay.
Because the thing is, if you're in an industry where you are triggered based on your own personal unresolved conflicts, you need to take some space from your work or from that industry, do some work on yourself so that you know about boundaries. And if you're, say, facilitating a workshop, and there may be something, we're all human, there may be something happens amongst other people that triggers you, well, then you need to be a professional and take a break. Maybe call an early lunch break or something.
Mm-hmm.
Call your supervisor, call a friend, call something, regroup, and then come back. If you can't that day, then postpone that session until the next day or another time. But I don't think that any professional, quote unquote, should use the participants, their participants, their clients, to deal with their own issues, right? Mm-hmm. And there are certain celebrities out there, one on TV. I won't mention any names.
I'll ask you after the show. Yeah, okay. I'm very curious.
that do exactly what you just described. And you know, sometimes what happens with some people, their ego gets so inflated by fame that they think that they can do anything that they like, that they're the center of the universe and everybody will, you know, follow.
Kowtow.
Yeah. And I think that is highly unethical. Mm-hmm. Right? In the workshops that I do, for example, and this one on January 10th, it's coming up, I allow time for interaction. So the participants with me, the participants among themselves, if they so wish to. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things in the other workshops that I've done where certain emotions come up. But that's where you have the facilitator who should then facilitate. Meaning, if that person sees that this one person is getting is crying, first of all, and it's disrupting mm-hmm. the flow of the thing, then facilitate. Ask that individual who's emotional to maybe go to another room with you, deal quickly with her issue and see if she can compose herself to continue. If not, then, you know, she can come back for another workshop or something. There have been cases where that has happened with me. Mm. And I've taken a break. You know, so everybody takes a break, coffee break type of thing. And I take this individual into another room and we have a quick session together, mm-hmm. 10 minutes, right? No extra charge for things like this. And one individual wasn't able to compose herself. And I asked her, you know, we agreed that it would be best if she left that night and came back for my next workshop. And that was complimentary for her, right? So that's when the facilitator, you know, you do a workshop, and I think many people can speak, mm-hmm. but the thing is, a facilitator has to have certain extra qualities.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
To know, to sense what's going on in the community, in that place, in that, at that time. And mindfulness is very important mm-hmm. at that time. So, yeah.
I call that hostess with the mostess, or host with the most, where I know for the work I do in the downtown east side, mm-hmm. as an example. And yeah. Ironically, that's separate from the situation I was thinking of. But with that, when we train volunteers for that, that's one of the qualities I look for very specifically, where they can read body language from halfway across the room.
Sure.
And they can see where something is percolating and can nip it in the bud by acknowledging, mm-hmm. dealing with the situation. If somebody needs love and attention at that stage or resources, making sure that that's reached and reducing, say, probably about, in all honesty, about 95% of potential escalations.
Yes, exactly.
By just holding space. And that's their job, where sometimes people, and which is why I say it's hostess speak or mostess.
Yes.
Because you're walking around, you're reading and scanning the room mm-hmm. constantly. And mm-hmm. literally, I know when I do it, my hands are out in like Tadasana pose and mountain. Yeah. And just literally holding space where I can feel the energy coming off my hands.
And you know, the thing is, and you're able to sense what's going on in the room and how the interaction is going on between mm-hmm. the participants, and you can intervene. I sense that you have that ability to intervene and keep things flowing mm-hmm. as well. I mean, one of the workshops that I have facilitated in the past, it was a more of an emotional workshop where it was a weekend workshop where you really get down to the core. It was a couples workshop. And in a corner, I had a mattress. That was a safety place and curtains around. So if things got too much for any one individual, they knew they had the permission with from the group to excuse themselves and just go and sit down for a few minutes in their own space on a comfortable mattress. And then when they're ready to come back and join the group, they could do that. So there's many different ways to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this workshop that's on the 10th here, you know, it's a fun workshop. So there's no mattress.
Some people might consider that fun, though. So.
Well, that's true. But the thing is, that when you talk about sex and you have a mattress, well,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's a very good point, especially when you're building anticipation.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't want to get, I don't want to have to really put my facilitator, you know, characteristic in overdrive here.
I can only imagine that, what that would look like on a SWOT analysis for possibilities of things going funny.
Exactly.
That actually would make a great 25-minute television show.
Yeah. We should do that. YouTube.
Yes, we could. That would be absolutely hilarious.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think is this is so important, this work that you're doing. So I give you kudos.
Mm-hmm.
It was this morning I was reading about another cuddle service that had opened
mm-hmm.
where people are screaming for intimacy,
yes,
whether they're single,
yes.
whether they're in a partnership. The fact that I know the original one I think that I'd heard of was
mm-hmm.
in Portland, and
mm-hmm.
then there's just one that opened in Victoria.
Right.
And where people just want to be held.
Yes.
They want that girlfriend experience
yeah.
or boyfriend experience.
Yeah.
And just that connection,
yeah.
especially spooning.
You know, I was hearing, and in relation to that, I think it was the radio I was listening to a couple of days ago, and they said that we've developed into a culture where it's so high tech that couples, when they go out, instead of holding each other's hands, they have their smartphones on there and they're with each other, but they're also talking to other friends, texting, et cetera, et cetera. And I found that so sad.
It is.
Right?
No wonder there's no intimacy.
Exactly. And so this cuddle service that came out, people miss that. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, they have to pay for someone else to cuddle them. But the thing is to go to that extreme, to make an appointment, to go there, to have a stranger cuddle you for an hour, to pay all these things. You know, many of us out there are just deprived of just touch.
Yes.
Just touch without any expectations, just cuddling. I mean, that it's natural. We're born with this characteristic that's very natural, babies and their mothers.
I was just
right?
thinking that.
Babies and the fathers, too.
Yes.
I loved cuddling my daughters. I still do.
Yeah.
You know, the one's 12, one's 7, but hey, there's not a day that goes by where I don't hug them for long periods of time.
Mm.
But, you know, this nurtures us. I mean, can you imagine? Just imagine cuddling someone or hugging them, holding your arms around that person. What's your body saying? I accept you.
Hmm.
I accept you. Can you imagine how many people out there don't get that type of validation, that acceptance on a daily basis? I mean, that's sad.
It is.
Yeah.
It makes me think that would be a whole other service that would be really great to actually have mandatory for seniors,
mm-hmm.
especially as their friends and loved ones are dying
yeah.
off, where
yeah.
they get touched.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I do, and things are coming up. I don't want to disclose too much about my workshop, but one of the things I do with in first week one.
Okay.
One of the things, of many things, is that, I mean, one of my clients, after they went through this program, by the way, they said, you know what? I think I got my PhD in sexuality now. Well, maybe. I don't grant a certificate, but.
This is so much more than a piece of paper.
Oh, it is, because
it's richness.
Meaningful.
Well, it's life.
It's life. And one of the things I do is I say, 30-second hug. So you wake up with your partner, or if you're not living together, when you see each other each time, each day, you just hold each other for 30 seconds. Don't talk. Just look at each other. Hug each other. 30 seconds. Just allow that energy to flow between each other.
Mm.
When you're parting at the end of the night or going to bed if you're living together, again, 30-second hug. Look deep into each other's eyes before going to bed. I mean, can you imagine doing this and other exercises before the hugs that I give? You know, I've had people say they started sleeping better now. They haven't slept better for years. And it's not just that they're getting more hours of sleep. It's just that this energy of acceptance, this energy of feeling loved and validated, and then the massages and all those things that I bring in there, people feel good about themselves, right? And they sleep better. They eat better. They digest better. Wow, they just are happier people.
It's one of the fundamental things, isn't it, for Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Mm-hmm.
For self-actualization, yes, is to feel love and respect from others.
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense in regards to going full circle to our conversation about the coming out of the closet, where the two people are attracted to each other.
Yes.
And don't want to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. They're scared to.
Yeah.
And it's that fear of being rejected, mm-hmm. fear of what will people say.
Yeah.
It's all of those pieces.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, where does that come from? A lot of time, I mean, it comes from society, but...
It comes from self.
It comes from self. You know, because the thing is, I mean, we could just say, well, the person was bullied when they were younger and or their parents were very Victorian or very stringent, you know, demands and all these things. Sure. But the thing is, you know, you have two people. Let's say you have two people. Both have the same type of challenges growing up. But one is openly gay. Mm-hmm. The other one is in the closet. What's the difference? Okay, sure, there's certain personality differences maybe. But the thing is, we can consciously choose to be bullied, to succumb to this type of antagonistic type of stereotypes and things from society, or we can choose to stand up for what we want and who we are, right? And the people, today's society, I think, the ones who come out and really say, this is who I am, take it or leave it type of thing, society, I think, today respects these people more because, you know, they're out there saying, this is who I am now, you know, look at me now type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very powerful statement. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
So if you could wave a magic wand.
Mm. Oh, God.
You know, that question always comes up.
That's something that I say to my clients. But go on. Let's hear your version.
And they were able to do some pre-homework before taking their workshop on January 10th and building it up through the Christmas season where people get so stressed out. I don't know if it's true about the suicide rates being higher during Christmas because people have all these expectations about what the holiday season, and it makes them acknowledge if they feel alone, not connected, not accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that perhaps they can do now. And then so they're even more ready for January, where they come in, where they're not depleted completely.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I could answer that by saying that, you know, how to talk to your partners or what kind of things to do. But you know what? I'm going to answer that this way.
Okay.
Because the other ones, they can come to my workshop and
yes,
learn.
Yes, they can.
And experience that. But I think the key in everything is how you treat yourself, putting yourself first. So instead of going to the mall and frantically searching for the gift for this person and that friend and that relative and that uncle and trying desperately not to forget anyone, why not just go to the mall one day, a whole day, and just do something for yourself? If you want to buy a gift for yourself. Go and get a gift wrap for yourself. Put it under the tree for yourself. Make yourself feel important. When you feel loved and when you give love to yourself, wow, other people see this because you will have that energy to then emanate, you know, distribute that love to other people as well. You know, I give this homework assignment to my clients, usually in the first session. I ask them this. Let's try this with you.
Okay.
Okay. When you were a child, growing up, what was your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Ooh, I had two that I used to get both at the same time.
Okay.
Tiger and bubblegum with the real bubblegums inside them, even though I think my poor level, because I used to swallow those things.
Yeah, that impulse to swallow it.
It was before we knew gum was bad for you to eat.
Let me ask you this. When's the last time you enjoyed these two flavored ice cream by yourself together? When's the last time you did that?
For me, I'd say it was July.
Okay.
And since then, just I've been trying to eat warmer foods.
Okay.
Because I've apparently, according to a friend of mine who's a Qigong therapist, just I have too much yin in my body. So I need to kick up my yang by having more warmer foods.
Okay.
So I haven't had as much. Okay. But yeah, I love that.
It's been a while.
It's been
about a half
six
a
months.
Year. Yeah. Here's the homework assignment. And for you, you can do small portions, okay, if you want. So that I don't get a call from your dietitian saying, what are you doing? I heard you live on the air. Go to your favorite ice cream parlor one day.
Okay.
You drive there by yourself or take a bus. Go there by yourself. Order these two special flavors of ice cream in a mini child cone, okay? For you guys. Take that somewhere, and this is good for all season. I mean, I know it's cold out there, but take it somewhere peaceful, whatever peaceful is to you, by the ocean or in your car or wherever you want. And as you lick each lick, with each lick, I'd like you to remember a happy memory from your childhood. One happy memory with each lick from your childhood. By the time you finish this ice cream, how do you think you'll feel?
Pretty blissed out.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, we are a society that we think you go see a therapist to complain about the way we've been raised. What, you know, my mom did this, my dad was this way, this way, this way. Complaints, in a sense, some legitimate, of course. But the thing is, we forget that there are happy memories from our childhood, too.
Yeah.
So when you now and then check in, and that ice cream is from the childhood, it's a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
It's a symbol of our childhood. In a sense, in just 5 minutes eating this ice cream, you are regressing back to something. And that when you come back to the adult state after you finish this ice cream, that sense that, wow, you know, things are not that bad. I've actually lived a pretty nice life. Now, when you can say that, I mean, can you imagine the rest of the day, how it's going to be for you?
That'd be pretty amazing to start the day with something lovely like that. That's making me think, I wonder if I can do that with hot chocolate, although whipped cream in the morning might be pretty intense.
It would wake you up.
Oh, yes. Might crash too very soon.
Well, there you go.
Although if my thought process is pretty solid that way. And
I
temper it with a glass of water as well.
Yeah.
Then I'd be okay.
I mean, it could be a lollipop. It could be anything, really.
That's true.
It's just a symbolic thing where we remind ourselves.
Actually, even a mandarin orange at this time of year, because it used to be at the bottom of Christmas stocking, where you open your stocking,
you
dump it open.
So with each little piece of orange that you separate, there you go, a happy memory.
A happy memory.
Yeah. And it's for yourself. But if you're with your partner afterwards, share those thoughts with your partner that, you know, that lick or that piece of orange reminded me of this. And, you know, you could go on for so long sharing a part of yourself with your partner. And that's really an aspect of intimacy, really getting to know yourself and sharing it with a loved one.
You realize this is probably going on my Facebook inspirational feed tomorrow. Because I think that would be amazing journaling as well.
Yeah,
to really
exactly.
Connect with self and partner.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm all for writing things down. Whether it's words, phrases, whole essays, mm. right? I'm saying this when, you know, essays are probably due at UBC of around this time.
Oh, they're doing exams right now, those poor souls.
Oh, yeah, the exam started already.
On that note, your book is here at UBC, so mm-hmm. I'm wondering what, I'd be very curious what exam questions they've got about your book.
Oh, wow, I don't know. I don't know. They don't make me privy to that information.
Darn, I bet there's listeners out there going, oh, yeah, Faisal, yeah, really? Yeah. But for our listeners out there who may not be familiar with your book, do you want to share a little bit about it? Because it's pretty cool.
Oh, sure. One of my specialties is counseling couples who are in cross-cultural relationships. And so over the years, I've had people from all different cultures and backgrounds and things. And so I've always wanted to have any type of resource to give to my clients and my patients to see, you know, just so that they can do some homework, reading and things. I couldn't find anything. So long story short, I then took all my clinical cases and my own perspectives and my values and things, and I wrote a book. It's called Dating the Ethnic Man, Strategies for Success. And first, I wrote it for Caucasian women dating either an Asian, South Asian, or Middle Eastern man, and some of the challenges that they face and how to overcome it. But after it came out, and still, it's been 5 years now, but I still get on a weekly basis emails from people around the world who've read it. And a large majority of the people read it are men, not just women. So men saying that I didn't realize that about myself, that I said this to my girlfriend or my partner, and now I understand what the genesis of this is, why I said this and why I'm doing this. And at the end of each chapter, it's like a workbook too, where there's all these questions for contemplation where the partners can read the questions and have discussions about them to create intimacy in their relationships.
That's pretty cool, because now they're actually getting the self-acceptance piece in addition, which is so beneficial to the relationship
Well. Oh,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So in terms of everything, I can't believe it's at the end of the hour already. But what I would love is if we can connect, because you've got your workshop coming up on January the 10th.
It's January 10th, and it's in the evening from 6:30 to 9:30.
Okay.
And people can read all about it by going to my website.
Yes, and as well as that, if they want to check out and order a copy of your book as well.
Oh, of course. And the website is multiculturalromance.com, and the workshop is called The Art of Love, Romance, and Sex Across Cultures. They can sign up and register right online. If they want to know more about it, just give me a call. My phone number is 604-899-0102.
I give you kudos. You're one of the only people I know who share your phone number publicly.
Oh. You know what? I say to my clients, I'm an open book. Go to my website. Google me if you want.
Yeah.
You know, the more they know about me, the more we know about each other, the more beneficial the work that I do with them is.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show, as always.
Thank you for having me again.
And up next is the lovely Pyra with a Vampire Ball. And Marion is not on tonight, but we've got the beautiful, sexy Pyra, who's about to come on and have an awesome playlist for you. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.